Phase one, phase two, phase three?
Yes. So, this is how I'm going to start, okay? So, there's a lot of debates on which practice is important and which practice is prerequisite for this certain practice. So, I'm going to bring this to your attention, that the first phase for the training purpose, practice of shamatha, or practice of anything that relates to mental stability, okay? That also includes physical stability. So this first phase, 100% focus on the stability, okay? And then the second phase, you still continue shamatha or mindfulness. I gave 60% for the stability. You're still maintaining stability. And then I gave 40% for the insight. Insight, understanding, realizations. So this insight refers to vipassana, okay? And then the third phase, integration of mental stability inside, then cultivates loving kindness, compassion, and bodhicitta, and other positive. So the reason why I emphasize, maybe that's what I've been doing. Now, I hope next year I may come up really different, hopefully different practice. I know that I've been spending many years on this and I'm still stuck with this. So the reason why the first phase, there's no need, there's less emphasis on insight, is without a good foundation of stability, if insight happens, it comes and it goes away so fast, and there is no enduring experience of the insight. So even there will be insight will not endure. So it will not go deeper level of our consciousness. It maybe conscious experience comes and then goes right away. So it's like a experience of pleasure rather enduring happiness. But on the other hand, if we focus the practice of this phase one, stability, then even insight may happen naturally. So out of stability, like when you have a concentration, paying attention on certain object, and insight just happens. For example, if you focus on breathing, if you focus on observe differently, you will gain the whole Dharma knowledge just observing breathing. So if you stay with the breathing, you will also gain the interdependent nature. You will also see the impermanence. You also see the selflessness of breathings. You also see the emptiness. It just comes. So sometimes I think we chase after the wisdom and insight frequently and lose the foundation of that. So what I'm presenting is, if we have this first phase, doing longer practices, then this insight vipassana will come naturally. Okay? And when it comes, it will definitely stay longer time. And now, let me share you some clinical examples. Although I know you all are not clinicians or therapists, but if someone presents anxiety or trauma, the first approach is to create this safety environment, secure, grounding, stability, trust, connections is required here. One cannot explore the trauma right away and then it will increase more and traumatize. So therefore, this approach is definitely applicable for other clinical issues. So first focus this, and then person and therapist might be ready to talk about gaining more insights about the trauma. And then gain insight, and then person has already developed this stability, and so person may open up more, maybe not open up all, maybe traumatic or stressful, but maybe open up one at a time, because then that shows that the stability is still continuing. And then the third phase, then there will be integration. At that time, there's more stability and there's more insights, and then this is the third phase where person is healing from the stress or the trauma. So I see the same process in our Dharma practice. Yes.
Am I assuming this happens over the course of one sitting, or does it happen over several times?
So during our third step practice, we actually, the first session, we focus this first phase. And the second session, we focus on the second phase. And then sometimes I add this. So, for example, let me mention what exercise we did yesterday. We did exercise on interdependent nature, how we are really connected each other. With that interdependent nature, we cultivate loving kindness and compassion. So that interdependent nature, understanding of that is here inside. And before to experience the interdependent nature, we need some sort of stability, paying attention on one object, like breathing. Then we learn that now we are using that interdependent nature as a foundation to cultivate loving kindness, compassion. That's what we did. Okay, so start from focusing on breathing, and then bring the concept of interdependent nature, and then through that, then we cultivate loving kindness and compassion yesterday. So that way, you can see that this phase go one by one. Okay. All right. Any question? Let me ask you. Do you feel that if you do this, that your meditation practice is very slow? Yes.
So would it be just the first phase where you use the comment to yourself thinking to try and just get the stability? When your mind starts to go off,
right?
Then
you keep on.
First phase, you just keep saying thinking and go right back to
right.
Breathing.
Yes. Thinking or thought. If it is a thought,
mm-hmm.
You say thought, and then go back to the breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And then there will be feeling, and you say feeling, and then go back.
Mm-hmm.
So if we go back like this, like this, like this, like this, like this, and you are not repressing, suppressing, Because you are acknowledging, processing, noticing, and then you go back like this.
Second and third, you go ahead and sort of follow the feeling or thought to...
This insight. Now let me talk about the insight vipassana. So vipassana, when you do this, you start from here, and then you actually, this time, if sensation like pain comes, so this time you notice pain and going back to the breathing, that would be the first phase, mental stability or shamatha. This vipassana, now you are staying with the pain, and pain becomes the object of your mind. So you are observing now pain, or what is called pain. And if we ask what is pain, then we will know certain thoughts, feelings, and sensations. And so vipassana means staying with that. So if we stay long, then we may gain insight. Okay. But when you do this practice, you also actually being aware that you can always go back here. This sequential practice doesn't mean that you go here. It also means you go from here to here and go back and come back. And at least for the training purpose, you go like this, this, this. But then after practicing these two in a sequential base, then eventually they integrate. And in reality, these two are inseparable. Because whenever there is a concentration, there will be insight. When there's insight, there's a concentration. Okay. But for the training purpose, you actually kind of separate them and kind of specialize.
So could I ask two questions to try to clarify for me about this?
Right.
So on the second phase, when the idea is a thought, say a thought comes up.
Right.
And so is it correct that if a thought comes up about having lunch with my friend tomorrow,
right,
I probably want to employ shamatha and do not concentrate on that thought? But then, so the second question is, if a thought comes up about like impermanence or selflessness, that thought would be more productive to examine that thought?
So Bob, can you repeat the first one?
Okay, so the first one is if the thought comes up about having lunch with my friend.
Okay.
So, and I'm saying, I'm asking, is it correct to say, no, I don't want to follow that thought?
No, I'm not saying that. Okay. No, there's no no.
Okay.
There's no no.
Okay.
Actually, there's no yes, nor no. What there is thought.
Yeah.
Thought.
Right, but that's in the first phase. But in the second phase, you examine that thought, right?
Right. So if you are practicing first phase, the shamatha or mindfulness, you notice that thought as thought, and then you go back.
Right.
So if we do that, that's a very, very skillful. I'm not sure what you think, but I find that these techniques are very simple, profound, and very skillful. When we have this thought, we simply see thought as thought. We did not see this thought as positive or negative. Then it becomes more judgmental thought. Okay, and then that kind of continues the cycle. So for the first phase, yes, now you we experience this thought and recognize thought as thought and go back to the breathing, if breathing is your focus. For the second one, if you want to do vipassana, so you're continuing this shamatha or mindfulness, and now this thought came up, having lunch with a friend. So if you want to do this insight, vipassana. Now this time, actually, you simply stay with that thought. And you are kind of observing and watching that thought. That means this thought came and you are observing it, whether it stays there forever or it changes. And also you're observing any feelings with that thought or any sensations. Most of the time when we experience, these three might go together. But sometimes we get stuck with just the thought that we have. So even I have a thought, having lunch with my friend, it's a thought, but there might be feeling too. Not might, there is actually. Feeling is one of the five omnipresent mental factors in Buddhist psychological models. So feeling will be there with every thought, every experience. But we usually don't pick up that.
Would you say that if you're sitting, mm-hmm. meditating, mm-hmm. and you attain a certain amount of stability, mm-hmm. and you have a thought, that mm-hmm. that thought maybe comes with some intuitive information that you might not get about your friend? Let's say you're thinking about your friend. If you're just driving your car in traffic jam thinking about your friend, that's just a thought. But if you're meditating and that friend comes to your mind, you might realize, oh, they're having some trouble, or oh, they need to,
That itself is a thought, right?
It's a thought.
They're having a
but
trouble.
But you might have some insight into that friend has been trying to tell me something for a while. I better.
Mm. So now you are engaging with the interpretation
of the thought.
Right? Of the thought.
Or it just may come in a flash.
Right. Intuitions may come. I'm not saying not to. I'm not saying the intuition will not come. It may come. But it seems that maybe we don't need to react,
right.
even for the
just
intuition.
Notice it.
Yes, if that's okay, and maybe after 30 minutes, whatever session you have, and then call and test your thought.
Mm-hmm. that, Could you say anything about speed of noticing? Because like when we were doing the leaf exercise,
right.
I noticed like if you're following the instruction and you put the thoughts on the leaves, and as soon as they come, you don't even really, you just know, oh, that's a thought, okay. It doesn't show up as a whole thought. Mm-hmm. It's just like a beginning of a thought.
Right.
Whereas if you're noticing, observing the thought, you give it more time.
Right.
So you go, oh, that is a thought about this little story. Or,
right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So is speed good? Like just bop, 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 bop.
No, I think you can do both. You do the slower pace or you do the leap pace. Or even there could be hundreds of leap coming, but doesn't mean that you have to put one thought on this, but put one thought here, and then way there, and the leap still comes.
Yeah. It's okay. Not like a video game with levels
right.
that get faster.
So if you are concerned about the intuitive knowledge, please maintain that. Maybe sometimes good to test after finish your session. Yes.
But when you observe that thought that I want to have lunch with my friend,
mm-hmm.
We're not interpreting it as,
yeah.
oh, that's a good thought, I shouldn't be, or that's a
yeah.
bad thought.
That,
but then you're checking the emotions that come with, the feelings that come with it, like,
yeah. checking,
I like this friend.
Right.
The warm feelings that I have, because
right.
I really like this.
Oh, so if you feel a warm feeling, then you simply notice warm feeling. And there's no interpretation whether it is positive or negative. This is what happens. So if we interpret as positive or negative, then we build reaction to that. And that's why we're trying to not like eliminate the reaction, but we want to take break more than now. So if we simply notice as it is, which is what exactly vipassana means. If you wonder now where Jamyang is going with his talk. So able to see things as it is vipassana. Okay, so that means able to see thought as thought.
And you can do that with any thought.
Yes, any thought. And we need to be very, very objective that use the same technique for the positive experiences.
But we're not trying to keep the thought, right?
If you keep, you are aware that now you are retaining or holding this, and you still observe, if I hold it now, what reactions I have. So everything becomes very, very useful. I think the obstacle is not knowing when we are holding it.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, of course, not sometimes, but we as a human, we really want happiness. We want the positive things. So it doesn't mean that not to hold. If you hold, then hold it with awareness, a little bit differently. Not 24 hours, maybe one time a day. So if we do that, then I can see that we are really liberated from reactions. If there's no reaction, then you have the best meditation, and that can be called best meditation. Now, that is also expression, but if we do the actual meditation, then we cannot express the best, because there will be another level. So whatever that practice, you actually go with that, and there's no additional judgmental thoughts.
Okay, so one more. So we'll take this having lunch with a friend, the thought comes up, I watch it a little bit, I see kind of, you know, different kind of whatever there is there, thought or emotion or feeling or whatever, then do you think there's a natural tendency for that to come to an end with that particular thought?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Because this is what I find fascinating. So first, I will have a thought having lunch with a friend. And then I may do something with that thought, and now I lost the whole opportunity to see the holistic, the entirety of that thought, because I interrupted doing something. So in my brain, in my head, that thought remains however I define it. If I define it positive, it remains like that. If I define that as negative, it remains there. Now we form reactions, attachments, aversions. But doing vipassana means having that thought and you still stay with that. If we stay there, then that very thought actually change, and you will really see that that thought actually changes, and now you gain insight. Okay, so usually it's a easier to use the example of pain. So let's say I'm having a knee pain and it is bothering to me. And usually there's a pain, and so therefore I may react on that pain and take painkiller medication or get up or do something. So the minute I react like that, now it really affects my perception about that knee pain. Because I stopped there, and now in my mind or perception, if I view that pain as painful, it will stay there. It will stay there because I have not analyzed, I have not explored, I have not penetrated the reality of the pain. Now, Vipassana presents the opposite, and that opposite is when we experience certain pain, it can be painful, yet with curiosity, open mind, stay with that as best we can and observe it a little bit longer time than our usual tolerance or thresholds. So if we stay, then we will notice that the degree of the pain also changes. And instead of pain, we may also experience some other emotion. So if we stop and react to the pain, then we lose all of these possibilities. Okay? So sometimes Vipassana practice can be challenging because we are exposing to our thoughts, experience, especially difficulties. And so that's why, if you want to know why Vipassana or mindfulness is becoming popular in health profession, is because Vipassana or mindfulness actually exposes us to the pain and the issues that we usually avoid. So it is challenging, yet the insight we gain might be very, very rewarding. So that's what Vipassana means. Yes.
So if you decide to to watch that pain,
mm-hmm.
won't you run into the risk of getting fixated on it and thinking about it all the time?
So that is a very good question. So when you observe the pain, bring this attitude that we talk, the attitude, the way how you pay attention to the pain. So this time you bring this openness. Openness meaning whatever is happening, able to notice. Because usually the stream, because there's a continuation of water, so we actually perceive that this is just one continuation, just one, I don't know, one entity or one thing, right? Because it is going so fast. But if we slow down, maybe bring microscope or something and watch water, you may notice that actually there's no solid water or there's no solid oneness. So same thing, if we have this openness, objective mind, non-judgmental thoughts, observing pain, then actually we may see lots of small parts of pain that actually makes this larger pain. So if we observe there, we may see the parts of maybe particles or parts of whatever that is. That is insight. So the whole, one of the examples of vipassana is able to observe phenomena as insubstantial. Insubstantial meaning that there's no solid. There's no solid self, there's no solid thoughts, there's no solid pain or feelings, because all are a combination of many factors. So if usually we feel more pain when we perceive it very solid. So if we look at, I usually say, this is looking from, this is looking at. So if we look at our pain, and there is a mind or self is observing, then we can see there. Okay. Yes.
So, do you think there's like different categories of pain? There's maybe some pain that's like, this is a chronic, serious medical condition,
yes,
of course,
yes,
that needs dealing,
yeah,
with.
Right.
But this is kind of a pain that is somehow part of the meditation process. It's like, this pain only,
yes,
comes up because when I meditate and,
right,
it's changing, working through old,
mm-hmm,
karma or whatever,
okay,
tension.
Right.
So that those pains that you just keep observing,
mm-hmm,
they'll dissolve.
Right.
But the other,
yes,
kind you have to.
Yeah, so we could have many different types of pain. And if we analyze, actually pain is not there. I'm not denying pain. We call it pain, but the actual pain, if there is actual pain, those pain are the thoughts that relates to our experience, the feelings that we have, the sensation that we have. But for the conventional purposes, we call it pain. So if we look at that way. But let us do exercise that is related to this. So this exercise is keeping your hands, I hope this is okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing weird things, and that's my judgment. So, first you hold your hands up like this, and then put on your eyes, on your face, like this. And notice what you see right now. Just mentally notice and keep in your in your universe, I guess. And just notice what you see when you actually place your hands on your face, on your eyes. Just notice. And now you gently bring your both hands a little bit separate from your face and notice what you see. And you are really now looking at your palm. And now you bring your two palms in front of you and see what you notice there. Notice, maybe this is your fresh mind looking at your palm, probably for the first time, and see what you notice there. And then if you go a little bit further and look at your palm and see, notice what you see there. Okay? So, that's the end of the exercise. So what do you see when we put our hands like this? What do you see?
Blur, dark blur.
Blackness. I saw the light in between my fingers.
Mm.
I visualized something in my childhood.
Yes.
And actually, the first time I visualized heart. When you said, "What do you see?" I thought, "Oh, I see a heart." And then I looked at it, and it was like from rig wrap, from a piece of sewing braid.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look at that! And I thought, "Well, this is a very calming, mm-hmm. very sweet kind of thing to do to your face is when, you know, when I do this, this is to, you
okay.
know, just gentle, calm down. So anyway, I saw this
okay.
thing from a, you know, I visualized memory.
I see, okay. So when you put your hands here, then you actually see kind of darkness. And you don't see your palm. And this represents looking from our own perceptions and assumptions and looking from our emotions. Simply see the darkness, that just means we don't see the reality. We see, but we see through our emotions, through our perceptions. So basically, it is not seeing things, okay? But if you separate your hand like this, now you are looking at, and so you really see your palm. You see all these lines, and you see your fingers. And you see the light in there. So doing meditation means looking at like this, looking at the pain, looking at our thoughts, feelings, and issues like this, separate from our conceptual thoughts. That is vipassana, seeing things as it is. Okay, so have you understood what vipassana is now? Okay, all right. So my next topic is about compassion, and especially for today, I need to focus on self-compassion. We talked about compassion yesterday, and there is more talk tomorrow. So tomorrow our talk on compassion is compassion maybe towards others. So for now, there's a new concept in the West, in US. Maybe it is spreading towards Europe too. And that concept is called self-compassion. And self-compassion meaning the experiencing of gentleness, kindness, forgiving, acceptance, non-judgmentals. So it is really not a separate from mindfulness experience. Okay. So sometimes this is also called mindfulness, mindful self-compassion. So let me mention you what is not compassion, what is not self-compassion, okay? So if we don't have self-compassion, then we have the opposite of kindness, we will have the judgmental, critical thoughts, criticisms, very harsh on oneself. And so if we have those judgmental thoughts and harsh on ourselves and critical thoughts, then we are not having self-compassion. Okay? That's not a, definitely not a compassionate mind. And so this, on the other hand, self-compassion has kindness, non-judgmental qualities, openness, gentleness, all of those. And now there's a second category. First, I would just mention what is not self-compassion. What is not self-compassion is when we focus on ourselves. So self-centered experience are not self-compassion. And there's the opposite side here, more universal-centered experiences. considering and thinking for others. Okay. Then there's a third category that is not self-compassion, is when we identify ourselves with the issues and problems. Whereas this other side, there is a self, but the self is an observer, and the self is not identifying with the problems and issues. So basically, now, the indications of self-compassion means whenever you experience certain thought, you have this non-judgmental perspective. You have more acceptance, you have more forgiveness, or you have more qualities of gentleness. And I mentioned yesterday, if I feel stress for a stressful situation, and one of the ways to handle is this is okay to feel stress for a stressful situation. Now that is kinderness, gentleness, and that is acceptance, and that is not a positive thinking, and that is actually connecting with the reality. Okay. All right. So that's brief what self-compassion means. Okay. All right. Now we'll do very, very short practice, and then we'll end for our dinner.
Just a tiny bit late, so maybe we have another five or ten extra minutes, if you care.
All right, okay. I don't want to keep more than six, because six is the time. So if we get out, we'll go out. So let us do this brief practice, the combination of mental stability, insight, and compassion and loving kindness. So first of all, being aware of our physical posture, and I usually call it awakening body. And it is also very, very stable posture that is supported by your chair or floor or cushion. So it is well supported, keeping your backbone straight and shoulders level. And now, let us focus on our breathing as we breathe in and breathe out, becoming aware of our breathing. As we focus on one object, such as breathing, it is truly natural to experience sudden thoughts or feelings or sensations. That just indicates that we are now increasing awareness. When we focus one object, the function is to increase more awareness. So therefore, we will or we may experience thoughts and feelings, sensations. And then simply notice them as it is and return to our breathing at this time. As we focus on our breathing, if thoughts arise or feelings, sensations arise, observing how we relate to our thoughts, feelings, sensations, observing whether we are reacting to that or gently, kindly responding to them as it is, without any judgment. Even if you notice you experience certain reactions, able to see reaction as reactions, and notice how you feel physically. Noticing our experience, whether it is discomfort or comfortable experience or neutral. If you happen to experience any discomfort, observe our experience of that, whether discomfort is centered around us, thinking, I'm feeling this discomfort, and see what happens when you have this thought and observing that discomfortness. Discomfort experience relates to our self-centered thinking, my own discomfort, then bring awareness that next to me and in this group, others also might feel discomfort. So my discomfort, feeling of discomfort is not only happening to me, but it is something very universal that happens with others. And notice what you experience when you shift your focus from self-centered to more universal experience. And now if you feel any comfort, relaxations, and notice your own experience. If you have thoughts or feelings, my comfort feelings or my relaxation, then bring awareness that this feeling of comfort, relaxation might also exist with others in this room or in the universe. So feeling comfort is also universal and not something that happens only to oneself. And then cultivate thoughts that may all living beings be free from the discomfort when you feel discomfort. And when you feel comfortable experience, you also expand that with the thoughts, may all living beings experience comfortable experiences. And then cultivate a sense of joy or appreciation that all living beings experience happiness and free from the suffering. And then gradually end our session. Okay. So that is the summary of what I talked and what we discussed. What do you notice? What do you notice with that? What kind of practice did we do?
Well, the thing for me that's a little different is the the phase three that you described earlier, where it's more universalized and less personalized.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a new aspect to me in terms of when I've been attempting to see
mm-hmm.
things as they are. So and then ending with beneficial thoughts. That's felt good.
If you don't mind going back to yesterday's question, so one of the ways to handle is to universalize
mm-hmm.
your experience mm-hmm. of this frustration with the work situation. But still not like just accepting and universalizing, but still continue to make changes if that is possible. And that is the middle way path. So universalizing or normalizing our own experience, yet at the same time still putting efforts to change,
mm-hmm.
if that's possible. Okay. Any other comments?
I had back pain, but it did lessen when it was universalized. We were glad to share it with you.
So it seems that our goal is to reduce, not to eliminate them. But it eliminates by itself, then that's great. Yes?
I've noticed when I do shamatha or vipassana, I go through kind of this, there's a period where I kind of like have a really strong sense of self-identification. Mm-hmm. Like it's almost like a picture of myself in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of gradually goes away as I get deeper into the meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can maintain that, then all of the any of the altruistic thoughts are quite powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But the more that comes back, whatever causes it to come back, then the harder it is, at least for me, to really generate authentic altruism. I mean, I can try to say it's there, but I don't know that it is if I'm really focused on this sort of conventional image, this conventional image I have of myself. That's there.
Usually at the beginning stage, almost every practice in our life is some kind of pretending.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just do.
Right.
And so that's, we also do meditation at the beginning. You hear some instruction and you kind of imitate. And then whenever you become a good imitator, then you have learned the meditation. And pretty soon, then you will be expert in that field. Remember one of the elegant sayings is, whoever is a good imitator is considered as expert in the field. Okay. All right. Well, how about we take a break for